You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
And we will get to the baseball this hour, I promise you, because the Brewers sweeping the Dodgers, I believe, for the first time ever. Not just the first time ever, but of course, after the Dodgers coming off a big World Series win last weekend in extra innings, the Brewers take it in 10. I will get there this hour because you know I love to talk about baseball. But right now, we have business to attend to. The important business of ensuring that we have a wonderfully engaged and educated electorate and citizenry here in the state of Wisconsin. Our next guest, her name is Crystal Potts. She's the Senior Director of State Relations and Statewide Outreach for the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Welcome to the show, Crystal. Thanks for making time.
Thanks, Maggie. I'm really excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Let's just jump right in. The biennial budget, the version of it that came out from the GOP in the state, basically was going to devastate the university systems. Dems came to the table. The governor came to the table. It was, I believe, when I did my little back of the envelope math, we went from an $87 million cut to the systems to a $256 million increase in funding for a $336 million-odd swing. That still is a huge gap from what the governor originally proposed, which was over $800 million in increased funding for Wisconsin. Let's start with the very basics. It's obviously helpful to have this additional funding, but
certainly,
what's not going to happen because we're not able to fund or frankly, we weren't able to reach compromises across the aisle to fully fund our university system? What's not going to be getting done?
Yeah, no, I appreciate this a lot, Maggie. And there's a lot of different sort of things in the hopper. So I'll try to cover a few different items pertaining to your question. So, you know, we're certainly grateful. We're public flagship land-grant university. You know, we are public higher ed, you know, campus for the people of Wisconsin. We are here for the people of Wisconsin. We've been supported by them for 176 years. I hope that we're going to be here for another 176 years. What I will say, though, is like back when we started this budget process, the Board of Regents had passed an $855 million increase. That would bring us from 43rd in the country for public higher ed funding to about the middle, so like 25, 24. And so that is over 2 years, right? It was a significant increase. I think we talked about it with lawmakers. You know, the university itself, UW-Madison is who I represent and work for. You know, we have a $30 billion economic impact on the state. For every dollar that the state invests in the university, we kick back about 26. And that's, I mean, these are old numbers, are like from 3 years ago, right? So I can only imagine that it's gone up from there. We educate, you know, nurses, doctors, teachers, engineers, you know, we are sort of the backbone of the workforce in this state. And so when, you know, we look at sort of what ended up in the budget, what signed into laws, I want to acknowledge too that compromise is not easy. Compromise means, you know, we sort of leave the table and there are things that, you know, we wish we should have, we wish we could have had, you know, things that we don't love as part of this, but certainly, you know, very grateful that there was at least an acknowledgement that we could get to some level of investment for the university. You know, that combined with some of the concerns that we have with uncertainty at the federal level, you know, we're sixth in the country for research expenditures. And for a state our size, like that, we're really punching above our weight class,
yep,
you know, in that sense. And so with that, we won't be able to sort of, not that we would intentionally use that money to backfill any of the federal uncertainty, but, you know, just not knowing what, you know, is going to happen in that space is, you know, something that's certainly on the minds of, you know, leadership here on the campus.
There's a couple of key statistics, Crystal, that I want to emphasize that you just noted. From an overall state public land grant university funding basis, we rank nearly at the bottom amongst all states. Most Wisconsinites, if you're at least of a certain age, remember when Wisconsinites, it was the crown jewel. There was this immeasurable sense of pride that we had these incredibly affordable, excellent quality educational institutions throughout our state. We've seen the closures of numerous campuses, two-year campuses. There was on the precipice of closing more four-year campuses. But 43rd in the nation is, I think, a shocking statistic to a lot of folks. And then you flip to the research investment side, where we and I'll just use the royal we here, that our state's flagship university as an R1 rated research institution, specifically in a lot of things having to do with genetics and biomedical engineer, incredible engine of innovation, intellectual property, patents, sixth in research funding, that now under Trump 2.0 is gravely under threat, which coupled with the overall lack of funding for the university system really is quite a acute threat to our state's economy. Now, I want to do this pivot, Crystal, because there is this organization, this research program housed at Madison, housed at our flagship university, that is called the Wisconsin Idea Database, that helps show folks in every single one of our 72 counties how our flagship university helps contribute to their economy. But I want to remind everybody what the namesake of that study is all about. It is called the Wisconsin Idea Database for a reason. Remind people, what is the Wisconsin Idea? Where was this first written down? Why does it matter so much here?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. The Wisconsin Idea is really embedded in everything that we do. The Wisconsin Idea really means that the borders of this university are the borders of our state and beyond. So this was originally, you know, as part of the Board of Regents, Charles Van Hise, one of our former presidents from a while ago, kind of enshrined this as part, and it's like literally written everywhere. I think it's like etched in the stone of Lake Bascom Hall, right behind, Abraham Lincoln. It is, you know, faculty, staff, I mean, it is the centering thing for our entire Badger community, that when we think about the work that we do, what we don't do it just in, you know, the classroom, we don't do it behind like a lectern, we don't do it just in, you know, under a microscope, right, in a lab somewhere. It's how can I share the things that I've been doing, the work that I've been doing, because it is a shared goal for both, you know, the state who it's invested in us, right, sharing the work that the people of the state has supported for so long. And so, you know, to your point, the Wisconsin Idea Database is hopefully a reflection of that commitment that the campus has to the state. You know, it's certainly not perfect. It's not grabbing like every single interaction or every single thing. But I think just it is, I mean, I think you've gone through it, right, Maggie? It's full of data, like any kind of data, the number of students, the number of alumni. We've got 191,000 alumni in the state of Wisconsin alone in all 72 counties. Right. You could literally go to any county in the state and see, you know, what money we spend in the county, how many students are from that county that are current students at UW-Madison, how much money we provide in financial aid. You had mentioned a little bit about, you know, some concerns around the state budget and federal uncertainty. One of the things that we really want to prioritize at the flagship campus, too, is the fact that there are a lot of students. Access needs to be preserved. And so there are students on the campus who need, you know, financial aid. And now 20% of all students that are Wisconsin residents that come in receive some level of help from Bucky's Tuition Promise, which says if your family makes $65,000 or less, you're guaranteed 4 years of tuition. It's as simple as that. And so preserving programs like this, it's just more challenging when we don't have the resources to be able to support programs like that.
Folks, if you're just joining us, my special guest this half hour is Crystal Pott, Senior Director of State Relations and Statewide Outreach at our state's flagship university, the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Crystal, I studied abroad in Denmark when I was an undergraduate. And I should note for the record, I'm a proud Badger alumni for my law degree. But when I was an undergrad, I studied abroad in Denmark. And there, the way that higher ed works in most European countries is completely different than what we have here. I'll just use Denmark as an example. Any student who was able to get in to any program was guaranteed to attend, no matter what their family's income level was. I hear words like meritocracy thrown around a lot in this country. To me, true meritocracy is that what you can achieve in your life is not predetermined by your family's net worth or the zip code that you grew up in. And the Wisconsin idea is so central to that. It is this fundamental notion that the university system will serve its residents and citizens, but that it will remain accessible, that higher education fundamentally remains accessible to anyone who is able to get into these programs. And yet we're at this point where it seems like folks might talk a little bit out of both sides of their mouths. When we've got, you know, billions in surplus in our state budget, and there are critical both capital needs as well as tuition support needs, faculty retention needs, research expansion needs in every campus, but using our flagship university as sort of the tip of the spear here. What do you say to folks that say, well, I didn't go to any of these schools, my kids aren't going there, so it doesn't matter to me?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a great, and I think that's where an extension of the Wisconsin Idea Database is something that I do. It's called legislative reporting. So what we do is we take the data that's in the Wisconsin Idea Database, and we can actually break it down by legislative and congressional districts, so that when myself and my colleagues, you know, in DC talk to folks, you know, elected officials about the impact of the university, the partnerships, because it's not just, I mean, I also don't want to say, you know, look how great we are. Like, that's not it at all. We're here, it's a partnership, it should be reciprocal, right? But I think once we sort of sit down with these folks and talk through, well, you know, these 200 students from your district, they're real folks. And we have extension offices in all 72 counties as well. That's a physical presence of our employees spreading the message, spreading the research, spreading the good work. I also do want to kind of mention something that you said about European countries and higher education. You know, one thing that I think is lost on a lot of people, 2 out of every 3 Wisconsin residents or graduates from the University of Wisconsin-Madison graduate with no debt at all. That's 66%. And I think when I share that statistic, people don't believe it. And, you know, we want to do more, because I think all people hear is like, the cost of higher education is like untenable, and, you know, people are going into debt just to get a degree. And at UW-Madison, it's just not the case.
And that 2/3 of, is that just at the University of Madison, Wisconsin-Madison? Yeah. 2/3 with no debt. I'll just share this personally. When I attended Madison for law school, I came in, I was paying in-state tuition. They paid to keep me there based on my performance. It was like cause effect. It was the first time I had experienced that level of cause effect, sort of meritocratic, like, oh, wow, you really killed your first year. Please don't leave. We'll pay you to stay here. And for that reason, I did not exit law school with a crippling amount of debt. I had some because it's still a bit to stitch together. But that meant so much to me. We're going to talk more about tuition on the other side with our special guest, Crystal Potts from the University of Wisconsin-Madison, because President Jay Rothman just yesterday announced that we may be seeing tuition increases across the universities of Wisconsin. So stay tuned here. We continue this discussion of higher education in the state of Wisconsin. On the other side, I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. If you've always or maybe sometimes wondered what we all look like, again, check out Civic Media's YouTube channel. You can also watch me fight with the camera that's in the studio from time to time. Good fun. We've got a great guest this half hour. Her name is Crystal Potts. She is the Senior Director of State Relations and Statewide Outreach for the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Crystal, let's talk tuition. The University's of Wisconsin president, so the president of the system, Jay Rothman, yesterday said that the Board of Regents had agreed to propose tuition increases for resident undergraduate programs by up to 5% for the 25-26 school year. So just to like call out a few, Madison is looking at undergraduate tuition and segregated fees of 12,000 odd. UW-Milwaukee, 10,000. UWO, almost $9,000, Parkside 86, Platteville 88, et cetera, et cetera. One of my hypotheses, and I just wanted to get your impression of this, is that when you compare Wisconsin in-state tuitions to what you see in other states, we're relatively inexpensive. Now, that still doesn't mean that it is as affordable as we would hope for all families. But as you noted before the break, two-thirds of Madison graduates actually graduate debt-free. And Mike, I'm curious what you think about this little hypothesis that I have. We have been talking about the student debt crisis, student loan crisis for a long time. It's real. Some of that driven by for-profit universities and online programs, which could not be any more different from the universities of Wisconsin and our system. We've talked about, and there has been, I think, a lot of ire directed at higher ed overarchingly as being unaffordable, saddling students with this debt, not allowing people to actually earn a salary that is able to sustain and pay the finance on their debt and other living expenses. We hear attacks on these overblown endowments that are larger than the GDP of some medium-sized countries. I'm talking about you, Harvard. I'm curious your reaction to this. I think that discussion has seeped into and kind of colored how elected officials in the state of Wisconsin are approaching our university system. Meaning, there's such negativity directed in the higher ed space, when in Wisconsin, the reality is that with relatively lower funding, we outperform so many of our peer state institutions across the country. We're relatively affordable. We have relatively greater outcomes. We have relatively greater average annual salaries of graduates, regardless of the school that they attend. We're doing incredibly well. And that's a story that I think gets missed a lot. What's your Yes. sense about that? You talk to legislators every day. That's your job.
Yeah, 100%, Maggie, you hit the nail on the head. I think that a lot of folks, whether they intend to or not, right? I don't want to place blame, but I think people paint higher ed with a broad brush. They hear about these folks that are taking tens of thousands of dollars, over $100,000 in student loan debt, and they have nothing to show for it. That's frankly the worst thing you could possibly do, is take on a lot of debt and then not graduate. And so that's not what's happening at UW-Madison. I think, you know, just a few things, like you'd mentioned, you know, other flagship institutions, other Big Ten schools, we're third lowest in the Big Ten. It's actually more like the Big 30 now, let's be honest.
It's such a misnomer.
But like, we're third lowest. There's only two other Big Ten campuses that have lower in-state tuition than us. It's Nebraska and it's Iowa, even with this increase. I think we're seeing a lot of peer institutions that are increasing their tuition, just given some of this federal uncertainty, right? But I think just to sort of go back to the outcomes piece of it, we like to look at the outcomes, like what are our graduates? So they're absolutely getting jobs. It's almost nearly 80% have a job upon graduation. For those that are taking out student loan debt, so that one third that we talked about that is graduating with debt, it's less than the national average, and the default rate on those student loans is less than 1%, which means they're getting jobs, they're paying back those loans. I'm one of them. I still have student loans that I'm paying off. But the fact that that default rate and the amount that they take on is a manageable amount, I think that's the story that's being missed here for sure.
And that colors how I think policymakers, you know, how they arrive at the table when we're talking about that funding. The other key statistic, Crystal, that I wanted to elevate and emphasize that you mentioned during our first segment was that for every single dollar of taxpayer investment in our university system, there is $26 of return, meaning economic activity, economic growth, job growth, all those things. That, coupled with the affordability and the incredible outcomes, that's the story that people should be hearing more of, is it not? I mean, this is a win for taxpayers when we invest in our university system.
That's absolutely correct. And I think, you know, certainly we're not perfect. Like, I'm not here to tell you that, like, there's nothing we could possibly do better. We can always do better, right? We can always get that number up. You know, we can certainly always think about, you know, one area we can improve is to, you know, think about better ways that we can justify the investment the taxpayers are making, because clearly there's some sort of, you know, disconnect between, you know, certain elected officials and then, you know, the outcomes that we have at this university. And so, you know, there are times when, like, certainly there are things that we could have the best facts and it still wouldn't change anybody's mind. But at the same time, like that one for 26, I mean, I would challenge folks to find a better economic engine or a better investment of state resources.
And source of pride universally for every Wisconsinite and every graduate. I remain so proud to be called a Badger and so proud to have you, Crystal Potts. I want to get this right. Senior Director of State Relations and Statewide Outreach for the University of Wisconsin-Madison on our show this afternoon. Thank you so much, Crystal. When we come back, we talk about someone who actually has declared for governor, a bit of the Brewers, and some national news. Don't go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Phone lines are open, 855-752-4842. We've got these packed shows, and I feel some days like I don't get to talk to you all nearly quite enough, but we've got time now, and I will be talking about the announcement from Bill Berrien, a businessman and retired Navy SEAL, that he's going to be running for governor. We're going to talk about the scathing report from the Wisconsin Election Commission about the fact that the Madison City Clerk, who's in charge of their election processes, did nothing with a couple of hundred absentee ballots. But first, I want to thank all of my amazing guests today, including State Senator Brad Pfaff, who kicked us off this afternoon talking about family farms in Wisconsin. Of course, DACA recipient and organizing director of the Wisconsin Fair Maps Coalition, Sally Flores, and most recently, Crystal Potts, the UW-Madison Senior Director of State Relations and Statewide Outreach. We've got Chris on the line from Janesville, who had a question or comment about the university system. Chris, go ahead.
So first of all, I support everything. We need the money for the university system. And I know it's not everything goes Friday, but I just wanted to put a point out there. So the Mercy East in off of Milwaukee Street in Janesville, they're striking, and the city put up a blockade on the road. I know that you can reach out to people, so please, please, please help with this.
So the city of Janesville is blocking demonstrators. Am I understanding that, or striking workers?
The striking workers are out there, and they have blocked the road in front of the Quick Trip that's directly across from the hospital.
Okay.
They blocked it so people can't get through.
I don't know why. The protesters or city police?
The city maintenance people.
Is it to prevent the striking workers and protesters, or is it an unfortunate coincidence, Chris? What are you seeing there?
Well, so I would like to say it's an unfortunate coincidence. But when I went through an hour ago, the two guys that were pulling the sign out in the road were yelling at people driving by, yelling that the protest was over.
That is interesting. And folks, thank you, Chris, for that. I'm going to call it breaking news update out of Janesville. Not sure I got quite all of that, but I am going to use this as a hard pivot. What I will say there is, if Chris's eyewitness account is correct, that you've got city workers in Janesville that are not police trying to wrangle protesters, it seems to be a bit out of their lane. And that's a bit problematic, if you will. And I guess I mean lane, pun intended. That's going to bring me to this report that came from the Wisconsin Election Commission about the Madison City Clerk's Office. If you're newer to the show, I was an assistant city attorney for the city of Milwaukee for many years. I then ran the city of Milwaukee's 401k style plan to help support retirement for city employees. And that would be self-funded retirement for city employees. And I was later the general counsel for Milwaukee County. I say all of this to say, I know a goodly bit about local election processes and about what city clerks do and about what county election commissioners do. And I am so ticked off by what the Wisconsin Election Commission has found occurred in the city of Madison. this is one of those things, like, I very frequently I defend public servants and civil servants on this program. I think the vast majority, and I mean vast, vast, vast majority of people show up every day, work hard, try to do good. They want to give back to their community. That's why they're in public service. But it is things like this and headlines like these that give the ammunition to those like Donald Trump, like Robin Voss, like Shyster Michael Gableman, who ran a $2 million con on Wisconsin taxpayers. This is what gives people like that ammunition to attack public servants. So this is from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, reporting on this by Molly Beck and Hope Carnop. This is from the Wisconsin Election Commission's report. This is a quote. It was the job of the Madison City Clerk to immediately take action once notified about the found absentee ballots. And she did nothing. It was the responsibility of the deputy Madison City Clerk to take action in her absence. And he did nothing. These ballots were treated as unimportant and a reconciliation nuisance rather than as the essential part of our democracy they represent. The Election Commission launched the investigation into the Madison City Clerk's office after commissioners had learned that 193 ballots had not been counted. The probe lasted 6 months while the commission staff reviewed nearly 2,000 pages of documents and conducted 13 depositions of city and county staff. To be clear, 193 ballots isn't going to change the outcome of most elections, and certainly nearly all elections in the city of Madison, given the population. But that's not the point. Your job as the city clerk is to ensure that all ballots are counted. You failed at it. Now, this woman who was the then city clerk has subsequently resigned. And what's notable here is this is the first time in the Election Commission's history, 8-year history, that it has used this investigative power given it. Now, I will say this in addition. I am so upset by this. I am so ticked off. I am so angry that an official would fail at their job's most essential duties. But I will also say this. Do you not remember a sheriff basically leaning on elections officials in the last cycle to not use drop boxes? I don't remember the Wisconsin Election Commission conducting some big investigation of that. And it ain't the sheriff's job to be telling election officials whether or not to use drop boxes. Do you remember a mayor putting a drop box on a dolly and rolling it into his office? And the Wisconsin Election Commission did not conduct an investigation. So all of this is not good. But I always want to ask, why this investigation and not others? Because political officials who are elected, like sheriffs and mayors, mucking about in the business of the literal business, whether or not there is a drop box where people can put their absentee ballot, that seems to me to potentially have a more direct impact on election outcomes than the failure to count 193 ballots in the city of Madison, given the population there. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. If you've got thoughts, we want to hear them. In other big local news today, Bill Berrien has announced that he will be running for state governor. And I found some of his language to be really interesting because in the last primary for the Republican nominee for president, Mr. Berrien supported Nikki Haley, which I knew about. And I thought, oh, is it possible, friends, that we may have a Republican that's going to run for governor that's not going to literally put himself in Donald Trump's pocket and do whatever Donald Trump says. Do we have a potential candidate that might be, I don't know, an independent thinker? Alas, my hopes were dashed as I read the press releases from Mr. Berrien's announcement. He is the current CEO of Pindle Global Precision and Liberty Precision in New Berlin. And he is joining Washington County Executive Josh Shulman in the 2026 Republican gubernatorial primary field. Here's what his release said. Bureaucrats and politicians like Tony Evers have failed Wisconsin. They sold our land to China. Just point of fact, I don't think Tony Evers has sold any of it. What is he even talking about? All right, I'll try to just get through reading the copy of his presser without commentary. They sold our land to China, encouraged illegal immigration in our communities, and welcomed boys into our daughters' sports and locker rooms. The time for change is now. By the way, he supported Nikki Haley to the tune of $30,000, which is, I mean, that's not Elon Musk money, but that's definitely CEO money. I don't know about you. I'm not writing any $30,000 checks for candidates. Yoy. His release continues. A Navy SEAL is never out of the fight. We've seen that fighting spirit from President Trump. It's the same fight it takes to run a Wisconsin manufacturing business. And that's where I went, oh, bummer. No, he is bear-hugging Donald Trump. And it continues. The globalist shipped our jobs and factories to China, and the career politicians let it happen, not us. You mean Tony Evers, that career politician who's worked in public education his whole life and was the superintendent of the Department of Public Instruction before he became governor? Because I'm pretty sure he had nothing to do with trade policy or shipping jobs overseas. Hi. We hire American, build American, take the fight to China, and create great-paying Wisconsin jobs. I'm an outsider and a businessman, just like President Trump, and I'll shake up Madison like he's shaking up D.C. No thank you, sir. No thank you very much. If by shaking up D.C. he means sticking it to working people across the country and, you know, being beholden to billionaire overlords and megacorporations, that's Donald Trump's playbook. That's what was just in the big brutal bill. Apparently, that's what Bill Berrien will bring to Wisconsin. I would have loved to be at the press conference. Do you support the big brutal bill, sir? What's a living wage to you? Is it $7.50 an hour? Because if you do the math, that's $15,000 a year. And last time I checked, that's below the federal poverty level, which we haven't really adjusted for 20 years. Are you freaking kidding me? By the way, how much, sir, do you pay your workers? What are their benefits like? Inquiring minds want to know. That is your breaking state news today, July 9th, here on the Civic Media Radio Network. When we come back, it's time for Over the Hump and Trump, because it is hump day, and I can think of no better topic to discuss than the Milwaukee Brewers. Y'all know I love some Brewers and baseball and beers and brats and all those good things. We'll be back on the other side and have some fun talking sports right here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us, and happy Wednesday afternoon. Hope your hump day is going well. There was a lot of really disturbing Donald Trump-related news today, not the least of which includes these two facts. You'll recall that former FBI Director James Comey tweeted out a picture of seashells that were in the shape of 8647. 86, a restaurant term that means like something's gone, but it's come to mean like to eliminate someone. 47 being Donald Trump is the 47th president. He deleted the tweet. He claimed to say, I didn't know that that's what 86 meant. Fine. anyone who is actually making an attempt to tell the truth in good faith would clearly know that the former freaking director of the FBI is not threatening to kill a sitting president. By the way, James Comey is like 7 feet tall. Not sure how he'd pull that off without being noticed. But apparently, the Secret Service followed Jim Comey and his wife around, like trailed him in a car, like in a spy movie, while they were on vacation in North Carolina after he errantly posted this. And they were tracking his phone. And they were waiting for him to come home. That is a gross misuse of the Secret Service. You want to talk about fraud, waste, and abuse? No Secret Service officer actually believed that Jim Comey meant that as a real threat. Bad taste, poor judgment, shouldn't have done it. Hell yes, and shame on you, Jim Comey, for many things. I have a laundry list of complaints. That was thing one. Thing two, in addition to that, the DOJ has confirmed over the last 24 hours that it has launched a criminal investigation into both former FBI Director Jim Comey as well as former CEI Director John Brennan, based on a criminal referral given to the FBI and the DOJ by current CIA Director Ratcliffe. This relates back to Donald Trump inviting Russia to help him win the 2016 election by engaging in hacking, espionage, and blowing up Hillary Clinton's campaign, which the last thing I remember is that Jim Comey really helped Donald Trump win. That's what this is about. And in case you forgot, Donald Trump, during Trump 1, sicked John Durham, a special prosecutor, on Jim Comey and John Brennan for months. John Durham never came up with anything. He had three prosecutions, one of which resulted in like a de minimis plea. This wasn't a low-level person, kind of like a fart in the breeze. The other two investigations resulted in criminal charges, and the juries acquitted the defendants. John Durham has been a big, spectacular fail, but he also investigated these two individuals for over a year during Trump 1, and now they're doing it again? Disturbing. I may get into that more because groups of federal prosecutors, including folks that have known to be very conservative, have been coming out publicly to lambast this. That is you want to talk about a sham investigation? You want to talk about the abuse of government to pursue political enemies? That's what that is. And if they can do it to the freaking former head of the CEI, if they can do it to the former head of the FBI, you think they might be able to do it to the little guy or gal like me and you? But I don't want to get stuck in the negative. The Brewers pulled off an amazing 10th inning victory, sweeping the Dodgers this afternoon. And the way that they won was spectacular. Jackson Chourio, with his first career walk-off hit in the 10th inning, batting in Sal Frelick in his short pants. I love me some Sal Frelick. Sal Frelick spending the last three or so weeks in the number one hitting slot for the Brewers, doing a fabulous job. Why is that important? Well, because you got Chourio. You have, of course, why am I blanking on this guy's name? The catcher, Contreras. Thank you. William Contreras and Yelich in that lineup coming after him. Pitchers don't want to have a man on base by walking Frelick with those guys coming up in the lineup. So Sal's been really effective in the one slot. And this coming on the heels of the amazing win last night. Oh, my goodness. And the incredible victory that the Brewers put together on Monday night against the Dodgers. Here's what I want you to know. First of all, Jacob Mizorowski, 12 strikeouts in five innings. That is the first time that's been done by a major league pitcher. Here's the other thing to know. All of the Brewers pitching staff, which included relievers Jared Koenig, Abner Uribe, and Trevor Megill to close out the ninth inning last night, those pitchers plus the Miz had an average pitch velocity of 99.32, fastball pitch velocity. That is the highest ever recorded in Major League Baseball since they started pitch tracking. An average fastball speed velocity of 99.32 miles per hour. I'm telling you, folks, that is damnedly hard to hit. I cannot wait to watch more of the Brewers. And the Cubs coming off a loss to the Twins last night. They're playing the Twins tonight. The Brewers pull within two of the division-leading, dastardly Chicago Cubs. So I never really say this too often, but go Minnesota Twins. Put up a big L for all those Cubby fans out there. That's going to do it for me today. Tune in tomorrow. We'll be joined by Republican State Representative Duke Tucker about his brand new legislation to introduce term limits in the state of Wisconsin. I love it. Can't wait to talk to Duke. Remember, I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.